Good evening, James McKinney here with My Science Hour, September 29, 2016. And if you hear a bit of background noise tonight, I have some electrical fans going here, other things going on, so hopefully it won't interfere with the sound too much. A peace committee, the U.S. Peace Council, traveled to Syria. They met with the president of Syria, the duly elected by a landslide president of Syria, and they brought their message back to the United Nations and the news media. And I watched this video, very interesting to see how they were simply blown off, literally, by the UN representatives and the news media. The news media was hostile. Like, how could you possibly go to Syria and find out something different than what we've been reporting? And basically, that's what they've been saying. So at any rate, but, you know, this is the old professor syndrome, where you have the news media who's reporting basically what the government tells them. They really don't have a presence there that would allow them to get an objective view. And all of the U.S. Peace Council was doing was trying to tell them that they have to get there on the ground. And the news media doesn't have a presence on the ground. They simply take the information handed to them by the U.S. government, and that's what they print. So the vast majority of people, and this is standard news reporting in the United States, the average person does not have a clue what's going on. And just, I know I try and keep away from political commentary on this show, but this is not really political commentary. On the debate this past, I wouldn't call it a debate. It was a couple of high school kids throwing stones at each other. There was no real content. The debate, if that's what you want to call it, the so-called debate, was kept at a third-grade playground fight level. And no real issues were discussed. It's like, you did this, and you had a bad deal with some guy who's in the audience, and, oh, no, you said this, and, you know, whatever it was, never got down to even third-level issues, let alone top-level issues. I mean, this is all about... Anyway, enough said. But the end result is what I wanted to say. You can tell the United States, the news media, etc., is... I have a very, very, very weird, bad feeling. And I don't talk about Trump. I talk about the Trump phenomenon, where he can fill stadiums with people who are desperately looking for another solution. And that's what I call the Trump phenomenon. There could be 100 people besides the Clintons and the Bushes and the, you know, the laundry list of so-called political insiders that we've had over the last many decades. You could put any one of hundreds of people there and they would get a lot of activity. And of course, Trump is well known because he's been public since his younger days. But, and, you know, anyway, but I'm not going to go there too much, but this is just a typical Washington, D.C. three-ring circus. And that's all they're going to allow it to be. This past week, the FBI supposedly, now, there's some disinformation websites on the internet, and the one, it's called, I'll say what it is because it's, you should know if you go there, and in fact you should know enough not to go there. It's called SOTT.net, S-O-T-T. And the people that run this are a bunch of ding-dongs. I mean, the boneheaded chick that runs this with her supposed scientist husband, and then their staff of pretend writers, obviously, I'm getting a lot of headway because my paid cast is about Tesla, and I'm releasing a lot of very insightful information. So, you know, everybody has to try and jump on the bandwagon. But they post this headline saying that the FBI finally releases documents of Tesla, including his death ray. Well, death ray is something I've mentioned on my show. And that's why I tend not to pre-announce anything, because all these wannabes jump up and try and grab my topics. And, you know, they can't do anything with them because they don't know anything. But let me tell you what they released. And this is not new news at all. A bunch of listeners wrote in about this, and that's why I'm covering it. This is really, really old news. The FBI did not ever have anything of Tesla's. So the 267 pages that the FBI released under the Freedom of Information Act was because it was simply stating that back and forth in emails and requests going back and forth stating they didn't have anything. So they released letters and internal documents talking about responding to the queries of if they had information on Tesla from the time he died, when all of his files and cabinets, etc., were taken by someone, and I already told you who did that. It was George Bush Sr. and the boys. George Bush Sr. was 19 years old at the time, one of his first real activities. But all the FBI released were letters. They didn't release patents or secret material or anything. And so anyway, I'd encourage you to listen to my paid cast, because I'm building up to the point where I'm going to release the actual weapons of Tesla. And the reason I know about these is because I've rediscovered Tesla's work, and I know what he was doing. But anyway, that's the short version. But just total garbage disinformation being pawned off on you, the public, once again. And these are disinformation sites. So when this stuff occurs, it's planted. It's put there. These people wrote books, supposedly. All they do is they go out and search the internet, and the titles of the book look deceptively like my titles. And they cover like Moses and the Moses and the Venus event, and on and on and on. So, you know, they're just copycats, but they're supported, you know, whether they know it or not. They get money under the table through their handlers from the CIA. By the way, the FBI letters saying they didn't have anything of Tesla's were highly redacted. So they were, you know, you could hardly read what was on them, but there was nothing really relevant to what Tesla did, because the FBI never had anything of Tesla's. Anyway, and I don't know why people even think they do, because that's just typical. People don't know what they're talking about. One more little update, and by the way, tonight's main science topic, what happened on Mars? And I'm going to go through some disinformation that's come out this past week, not the least of which was a congressional budget issue where they passed $20 billion to keep the Mars program alive. And when Congress passes any type of fiduciary support, especially for the space program, the idea of giving not enough money is exactly what the aerospace and NASA wants. Because then in 20 years they can go, well, we didn't do it because you didn't give us enough money. So the underfunding congressional game is old as the hills. But first, a quick comment. There's been a lot of information coming out recently by people high up in the NSA, etc. A guy named Binney, who's the next NSA head. I mean, he was the head of the NSA of information and disinformation and information collecting, who a number of years ago went independent and started talking publicly about what the NSA is doing. So at any rate, I wanted to mention that my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Front-End Profit, is very timely regarding this particular topic. It's an industry I worked in literally for 25 years of my professional career, in addition to teaching mathematics and of a number of topics relevant to telecommunications at the university level. So, in fact, I taught electronics in a technical school. I've taught a lot of these topics in a public setting. And so, the point I wanted to make, my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, is really relevant. So if you can get it in, it's only available in ebook format on my webpage. And what it talks about, it first of all, it shows you literally how to break RSA codes. RSA codes are the encryption and computer security algorithms that are used a lot in the public today. And you hear about 128-bit encryption. That's what they're talking about. They're talking about the RSA prime number encryption, public key encryption. There's a number of different names for this. So at any rate, what I did is back in 2007 when I published my book Calculate Primes, it was immediately understood that this broke the RSA codes and made them easy, very easy to hack into. But the NSA had already tooled up to break into all of your computers based on the so-called secure software that was placed in your computers or in transmission. When you hook up to a bank to do secure transmissions or credit card transfers, etc., that's typically what they were using. And so my work basically broke all those codes. And so 7 years later, and this was kind of odd. I didn't plan it this way, and I didn't even notice it happen until after the book had been published. 7 years, and that seven is a prime number, of course, 7 years to the date, March 5th, 2014, I published my Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit book. And so the reason I'm mentioning this also is because recently there's been some fanfare, supposedly, about people making advancements in the world of prime numbers, which they haven't. They have not done anything, and these announcements in the math world are as bad as in the science world. They come out making statements of having solved problems, of having advanced knowledge in the area of prime numbers, and people really have not. But anyway, the other thing that my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, does is it takes you into the dark, deep, dark world of encryption and the companies and the NSA, and it gives you an inside view of what's really going on there. I also just want to mention that just the book Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit is not sufficient to break the codes. You need also the book Calculate Primes. That gives you the mathematical side of it. The book Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit takes that material and then shows you literally how to break RSA codes. So all of the hacking that's been going on through the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, and everything else, that's what people use. And these RSA codes are still being used for encryption, like I say, because the companies that sell poor encryption would have to retool and sell you something that works. And they're being blocked from doing that by the NSA, which would have to retool and to allow them to break into your computer and everybody else's and businesses all over the world. Anyway, a complex topic. I suggest you look at that book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Ebook format. You get a link after you order it. And it's a good educational tool, and especially for kids. Kids today better get smart about this stuff because, oh, are they getting taken for a roller coaster ride. I just noticed Skype wants to upgrade, and the list of conditions, it's like WhatsApp, which I told people to get off their phone a number of weeks ago. I said, get that off your phone. It's 100% pure spyware. And Skype now is becoming the same. It's everywhere. They're coming at you from all directions. By the way, wanted to mention that this week's Paidcast, the topic is radiation and you. I think it's part three on radiation. And it's talking about, or no, this might be part two, but talking about the United States and the world, the conditions of radiations, and then of also what you should be doing to take care of yourself. So that's this week's Paidcast. By the way, that was supposed to be last week, but last week I did another version of Tesla's Mind, where I went through the patents, a number of patents that led up to the Tesla turbine. So that was, I exchanged that for last week so that there would be 2 weeks of continuity in the Tesla's Mind series. Then in October there will be some more series on Tesla's Mind, and I'll be getting into the basic physics of what you have to understand before you can understand the Tesla weapons. So don't miss the paid cast. You can go to my website and sign up for that. Very important material. I just wanted to make another mention. I was talking about the SOT.net announcement about FBI releases Tesla material. And this just cracks me up every time I see it. They come out and they announce some bozo, and he supposedly is a Tesla expert, has been studying Tesla for 30 years. And this is why I think it's so funny. They always say 30 years. But nobody's ever heard of him before. He's never published anything before. And he's coming out with some just goofy stuff, you know, and they always try and use terms that sound important. But then there's no content. They don't have any so-called inventions or advancement of Tesla's understanding. But just letting you know that, once again, beware of that. If somebody comes out, my work has a paper trail. So when I say I've been working for literally, well, since the 1970s, I have published papers. I have peer-reviewed published papers in my work. And so my work has a paper trail. So when these bozos come out and talk about 30 years of research, you know that they've been sleeping in grandma's basement for most of that time. On to the main science topic, dealing with this issue of Mars. I already mentioned Congress has passed another $20 billion to keep the so-called Mars program alive. And, you know, what you're going to get for this $20 billion is going to be spread around like butter through the aerospace industries, through NASA, to keep employees, to keep things running. And literally what you'll get out in the end is some artist conceptions. And like I said, they don't have to produce anything, because their excuse will be, well, you didn't give us enough money. But I want to talk about an article, and this was sent in by some listeners, and I really appreciate my listeners because they're on top of things. And I thought this would be a good time to discuss what really happened with Mars. Why does Mars look the way it does today? And, of course, I've talked about this before. I've done many shows on the condition of Mars, etc. But the disinformation, some joker comes out of the American Institute for the Advancement of Science. Now, remember, this is the agency that buried Velikovsky back in the mid-1970s, around 1974, actually. They developed a strategy headed by none other than Carl Sagan. This is what made Carl Sagan famous. He led the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the American Institute for the Advancement of Science. They're a little one and the same as far as I'm concerned, to head off Velikovsky at the path and basically bury him. Like Stephen Jay Gould was there. He was the so-called paleontologist who then later stole Velikovsky's material and actually won some posthumous awards. Isn't that sweet? You know, little Stevie there. And the other scientists along that in geology and other, in fact, when I was at Cornell, this is a little side note, I was going around talking to the various professors, and I walked into the geology department, and who's sitting there but the guy who headed up with Carl Sagan to fend off Velikovsky. And this guy is the head of the chairman of the geology department at Cornell. So I'm walking into these offices talking to people. So I walked into the secretary's office in the front, and right behind was the chairman of the geology department. His door was open, and I came in and I said, hi, this is Jim McCanny. I want to talk to so-and-so. I had an appointment with one of the professors there. This guy screams out of his room. He says, any professor that talks to James McCanny will lose his tenure. And the secretary looked at me like, you know, here we are. I'm looking at the secretary. The secretary's looking at me, and there was no need for her to repeat it. The guy screamed it plenty loud. And so anyway, she's like holds her hands up like, what am I supposed to say? You know, and I said, well, that sounds like the verdict. And so anyway, I had to leave. I was not allowed to talk to anybody in the geology department about my scientific work. There you go, open-mindedness. And the tenured professors would have lost their tenure if they would have talked to me. That's how much they feared me and Cornell. Remember that when I was on duty in the classroom, they had a woman professor follow me around at all times and look at all of my interactions with the students. Yeah, that's Mrs. Dr. Robertson was her name. But anyway, yeah, craziness. But going back to the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the American Institute, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronomics. Anyway, those are agencies that kind of go hand in hand. So this is what's so interesting. Some joker that comes out of these groups now makes a claim that Mars, get this, had a nuclear war. And the bombs went off. He says at least two nuclear bombs went off, and it changed the climate, and that's why Mars looks the way it does today. But he says this happened 180 million years ago. And then in the presentation, he goes and he's allowed by the Department of Defense to give his talk at the AIAA meeting. And so the question in the article that's writing this up says, why would the government allow him to give this material to the public if it were not true? Well, my response is the exact reason they allowed this bozo to present this material is because it's just a giant fairy tale. The CIA a long time ago began controlling science. And the only science that's allowed ever to get into the public view is BS. They filter anything that's real. So the public would never see anything. So the whole reason for this, but look at the mileage they get off of presenting this article. They're saying that it was due to a advanced lost civilization that had this war. They even have a drawing of a tank-like nuclear weapon that's shooting and guys dressed in, like, you know, Darth Vader-type costumes. But this supposedly led to climate change, which then, now, they had to get the climate change deal in there, you see. So this two nuclear bombs supposedly go off, kill all the population and all the life on Mars, changes the climate, causes the atmosphere to be lost on Mars and its oceans, leaving Mars what we see today. And so he suggests that we go to Mars for investigating to look for artifacts. And then they show Cydonia, which is the so-called face on Mars. I'm sure everybody has seen pictures of this, made famous by Richard Hoagland on Art Bell Show. And this, the picture that you see that's typically presented as the face on Mars is super, super low resolution. Well, now they have very high resolutions of Cydonia Mountain there. And what it is it's a volcano with the side breached. If you look at a picture of, say, Haleakala in Hawaii, it's the same. It's a volcanic crater, and this is very common with volcanic calderas, where the lava comes up and it spills out one side that must have been lower, and then once the lava starts going, it cuts away a ravine coming out that side of the caldera, and that's what's the Cydonia, the so-called face on Mars is when you get a high-resolution close-up photo. So they include that, and then some other pictures that came back from these little robot things going around the surface of Mars, the Discovery, little Discovery robots that NASA has there. And believe me, they have much better the equipment there than that. Believe me, 100% guaranteed. This is the baloney that they send to the public. But they show some little things that looks like a square rock. And so they go, oh, that's indication of intelligent life. You couldn't have a square-looking rock from natural means. But this is the data they're presenting, which is complete. You know, if there was an entire civilization there, I think you'd expect to find a bit more than that. Now, they're throwing everything in the kitchen sink. And, of course, if it was 180 million years ago, this would have had to been done by aliens, or so they're throwing the aliens. It could be aliens. They even throw in Sitchin and Nibiru and planets crashing into Mars, and they bring in every concept, every woo-woo concept that's been brought up in the last probably 30 years and throw it into the kitchen sink along with this. So what are they doing? What they're trying to do is take control of these topics and put it into officialdom. And you know, based on some joker that has literally no evidence, what evidence does this joker have that supposedly there was a nuclear war on Mars? And then they say, in the as you read through the article, it says this, then it looks for the current nations on Earth that could be responsible. You know, implying that Russia could have done it and caused a war and killed people there and killed the civilization, all life on Mars, and Mars lost its atmosphere. I mean, this article is all over the place. It doesn't make any sense at all. And if you look at it, Mars is a bit smaller than Earth, but its surface gravity is about the same as Earth's. That's the amount of force, gravitational force, at the surface of the planet. And so for Mars to hold an atmosphere is not that big a deal. It should have been able to easily hold an atmosphere and maintain it for a long period of time. But how did two, and where do they come up with the idea that it was two nuclear bombs, not 10 or 1 or 75? Why two? They had, the only data they got is some satellite data that identified from some xenon, and also xenon and krypton, which are potential, I say, potential byproducts of uranium fusion, of uranium fission, the breaking of the uranium atom. And it's a couple of the byproducts are xenon and krypton. But there's a lot more products, byproducts, and they don't talk about those at all. So this is really, this is the only data they have. This is the only identifiable data they have. So listen to what they get out of this. And also, I mean, this could have been from many causes because, you know, there's many possible sources for xenon and krypton to be near the surface of Mars. But look at the deductions they come up with based on just that faint, sparse piece of data, that there was nuclear war, that there was advanced civilizations, that there was atmosphere, that there were oceans, and the time frame when it happened, 180 million years ago, where on earth did they ever pull that number out of the hat? And then they say they think that could be civilizations today, implying Russia or China or India, that may have done this. Oh, God. I mean, I can't even stand it. This is so ridiculous. Then they throw in the alien issue. There could have been aliens. In Sitchin, in Planet X, in Nibiru, in Murdoch, and other planets that might have crashed into Mars. Oh my goodness. Then you look at the reality. Earth, the reason I'm talking about Earth, is because we had two major atomic bombs set off at Nagasaki and Hiroshima back in, you know, 1945 era. We had dozens and dozens, and the Russians had dozens and dozens of in-atmosphere nuclear tests. The dozens of them. And we didn't have climate change. We didn't. Why doesn't anybody talk about climate change due to that? Not a single person has ever in the world talked about climate change due to above-ground nuclear testing. Never has happened. So where does this joker all of a sudden is able to present this at an AI, you know, American Association for the Advancement of Science, AIAA meeting, and say that this causes a climate change, and then the climate change caused the atmosphere to be released from Mars? Doesn't make any sense at all. You know, the Soviet Union was setting off 50 megaton nuclear bombs back in the 60s. In the 50s, testing them above ground, boom, out in the middle of nowhere. You know, 50 megaton bomb, much bigger than the, you know, Nagasaki or Hiroshima bombs. And they were getting up, some make estimates as much as 100 megatons of TNT equivalent. Nobody talked about climate change, losing the atmosphere of Earth. Nobody mentioned a thing. So at any rate, this is what's being thrown at you, the public, today. Pure garbage. Now, I want to tell you that this was published in Nature magazine. And this farce where they say the military allowed him to give this information to you, the public. Oh, thank you, military. As if they're going to let any information out. And then the news media went back to the military and said, what do you think of this? And they don't give them any answer at all. Well, of course not. It's complete baloney. But my point is, look at all of the doors that are opened, giving them some kind of credibility. And they do it through this joker that they don't care about. But it opens up the door, making it look like they're doing research in these areas, which they haven't touched with a 10-foot pole before. This is what you call the creeping crud. And another point is that it's well known that Mars is doubling its atmosphere every 10 years. We know this from satellite data, and there's many reasons. I've talked about this before. So Mars lost its atmospheres recently, within the last few thousand years. But I also talk, and part of my discussion is that the reason Venus, the comet, came by, ripped off the atmospheres of Mars, and is what I'm going to talk about in detail here in a minute. I've talked about this, of course, many times on my show and in my books. So now they're coming up with this baloney, just pure BS concept of how Mars supposedly lost its atmosphere. The other thing they're doing is they're bringing this date much closer. The last round we had a few months ago about Mars losing its atmosphere was billions of years ago, 3.5 billion years ago. And, of course, where'd they get that number? Nobody knows either. And so the question is, how on earth did they come up with that number? Well, they can't tell you either. But see, they're bringing this up. Now it's only 180 million years ago, not 3.5 billion years ago. So it's bringing it up closer in time. See all the creeping crud that's going on in this release? Okay, so now what did happen to Mars? And why do you know that this is what happened to Mars? The reality is that when you look at the geology of Mars, you can see cratering. These are just a few of the things, and of course I've done many shows giving a lot more detail than this, but you see the cratering only in the highland regions. And these are pockmarked craters that are just like sprinkled around like popcorn around the surface of Mars. But you do not see any in the lowlands. That's where the oceans were. So the oceans would have absorbed any meteorite strikes and kept those the surface of Mars from exhibiting any holes, any craters. Oh, and if the craters formed, they would easily be eroded by the movement of water. And so you would not see any craters. But Mars is being hit. Mars is right next to the asteroid belt. So it's being pummeled with meteorite strikes all the time. So to have regions, large regions, the size, you know, say a half of the region, the area of Mars' surface, to have that completely free of pockmarks from impact craters tells you that this was very recent. The other thing you see on Mars is all of the coastlines. You see where the rivers came in. You see like the, you know, at the Mississippi Delta or the Delta of the Nile River, any of the deltas on Earth of the major rivers, you see islands forming. And those islands are very clear on Mars. You see craters that are on top of other craters, and you see old craters filled in. So you understand that Mars has a lot of sand activity, a lot of wind activity that is going to quickly destroy the surface features of Mars. Mars has winds that are currently commonly much stronger than those on Earth. Mars has hurricanes. Mars has tornadoes. And how do they form? Well, there's no water there. They form by exactly what I've said before. They are electrical currents from the ionosphere that drive these electrical storm systems. That's how they're driven. The hurricanes on Earth are driven the same way. They have nothing to do with warm water. And so you see all of the misinformation in the weather industry, in astronomy, in planetary geology, in, you know, it just goes on and on. All the misinformation that tries to keep the public from understanding what really happened. Because Venus also affected Earth drastically. And if the people in power, the bankers, want to stay in power, they better make sure the public is really stupid about all of these topics. So what else does that article do? Brandenburg, I think, is the guy's name. It puts it 180 million years ago. Huh, don't have to worry about that. That was before the dinosaurs, you know. But then, oddly enough, he's looking for culprits in today's civilizations, in today's countries, nuclear-savvy countries like Russia or China or India. Just bizarre. Just absolutely bizarre. Okay, so where did Mars lose its atmosphere? When did it happen? Mars lost its atmosphere and oceans recently. The ancients talk about Mars being a blue planet. So and they talk about Venus, the comet, coming by, and in a single night they could see it. It just sucked the ocean and atmosphere off of Mars and left it as what we see today, the red planet. How does a comet suck off the atmosphere from a planet? The nucleus is larger, and once it makes that electrical connection, it's a tug of war based on gravity, not electrical, but gravity. And so what happens is, well, there's some electrical activity in that it ionizes any of the ionized atmosphere would be sucked off. But the gravity, the surface gravity, would also be the deciding factor. When Venus, the comet, came by Earth, Earth won the tug of war because Earth's gravitational surface gravity was larger than that of Venus, which is smaller than Earth. Venus is between, in size and in mass and in surface gravity, is between Earth and Mars. So when it came by Mars, Mars lost the tug of war. When it came by Earth, Earth won the tug of war, but we had a tremendous event of pollution. Oil, hydrocarbons, water. Water is oxygen, hydrogen, hydro-oxygen compounds. And, you know, ammonia, the nitrogen, hydrogen compounds. All of this severe pollution occurred on Earth. That's why we have a tremendous amount of surface oil on Earth right now, much of which has been depleted. But that's why we have oil deposits in the bottom of the ocean, why we have oil deposits at the bottom of the Caspian Sea. Etc. So a lot of things happened during that time. But back to Mars. Mars lost its atmosphere recently, not 180 million years ago, because if that were the case, then the other thing you see on Mars is very pristine riverbeds, surface features. And I've talked to geologists at like American Geophysical Union meetings, and they look at you kind of sheepishly. They look at me because they know who I am and they know what I say. They all listen. All those, you think you're the only people listening? Every scientist at NASA listens to this show. They all do in their back room, and they don't tell anybody about it. But they, you know, they're the geologists. I'd go into a meeting of geologists at, you know, the American Geophysical Union meeting, and they were showing slides of Mars, and they would openly say, "Yeah, these are super recent. This is very recent activity," and they would recognize it as the same type of geological activity, water erosion, etc., as on Earth. And they realized that they see these erosion events on Earth and that they're very recent. They know what's recent. They know what causes these. They know how to date them. And none of them are more than, you know, a couple thousand years old. But they can't say it. They will tell you, "We can't say that. They don't allow us to say that." Isn't that bizarre? So, anyway, within the scientific community, within their own little own rank and file, within their own little cubicles, people can say various things. But the end result is that in public, none of these scientists can say anything relative to Mars being a planet that lost its atmosphere and ocean recently. I've been pushing this material. The Velikovsky was, of course, the one who identified the ancients' texts and related to the idea of Mars and Venus interacting with Mars. The reason that my work entered into this is because when you talk about my plasma discharge comet model, it gives you the mechanism for large comet nuclei to first attach electrically and then to pull the atmosphere off of Mars. So my work gives the scientific explanation. Velikovsky's work gave the historical record. But you can see now they're desperate. They are desperate to come in and give some kind of other alternative explanation for why Mars doesn't have an atmosphere. Oh, we're going to have to go out there and look for those aliens, you know, that caused that darn nuclear war up there on Mars. Anything but the truth. And I got a kick out of the fact that they used Sitchin's name in Nibiru. I mean, and they really didn't say how Nibiru had anything to do with nuclear war or nuclear bombs on Mars. I mean, they just said it. They just, like I say, throwing everything in, including the kitchen, into the kitchen sink. You know, pots and pans and spoons and food and vegetables and a scrap of meat. And how about a chunk of that fungus over there, too? This is an indicator of a disinformation agency, the CIA, who controls science, totally out of control and totally desperate. Totally desperate to try and control topics. Now, the other thing is, the reason I talked about Congress funding $20 billion for keeping this Mars, the NASA Mars program alive, the reason I mentioned that is because this is all hitting at the same time. These are coordinated efforts. There's nothing random or chance about all of this. This is all happening at the same time. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, I'm just kind of in shock. I'm waiting for to see how long it takes them to get this into kids' textbooks. You know, because the poor kids today are being thrown so much baloney. All they need now is to think that Mars had aliens 180 million years ago and that there was a nuclear war and that somehow Planet X, Nibiru, is involved in, you know, ancient, you know, Sumerian gods or something. Coming from the, you know, so-called hallowed halls of Western knowledge, sanctioned by the U.S. military. I can just smell this coming. And that's why, by the way, I'm working in the background on educational systems. A lot of people in homeschooling use my books for kids, but it's really, I have to get a lot more material out there for kids to learn. Because you have kids coming in, you know, the lower grades need a different presentation. So, you know, there's really a lot of work to be done there to get real material into the hands of young people. Yeah, I need to clone myself about 27 times here to do all of the things I'm trying to get done. And which brings up a point, too. I really appreciate the support people give me, and also the paid cast. That's very helpful. If you sign up for that, it helps a lot. But I'm just, you know, it's very important to see that support, not just monetary. I'm talking about the mental support and the people when I talk to them. People are really excited about what I do and very interested in the information that I put out. And, you know, as you know, you're not going to hear this anyplace else on the planet. So let me go into a bit more detail about how Venus, the comet, interacted with Mars, the planet. And just starting a little bit, going back a little bit in history, Velikovsky was very correct that Venus came from Jupiter. And the reason that Venus did not come out of Jupiter, that's what Velikovsky said. He was wrong about that. But I now know, and this was the work that I was developed back in the earliest days, and when I talked about this at Cornell University in 1979, I said, you know, if the comet nucleus first comes around Jupiter, and then Jupiter is already discharging the solar capacitor, then Venus, the comet that is captured, it's not a collision, it's a gravitational capture process. As it leaves the realm of Jupiter, it's going to explode into this giant comet. It's going to begin discharging the solar capacitor a lot more than it would normally. So Venus was literally born of Jupiter. Some people think it was born of Saturn. But anyway, that's not something we're going to decide in, you know, using modern scientific methods. Most of the difference there between whether it was Jupiter that captured Venus or Saturn, most of that difference comes from a misunderstanding of terminology. Was the ancient text talking about Saturn, or was it talking about Jupiter? And some of that refers to like Kronos and the various other names that were given to those planets back in the Greek and pre-Greek times. So at any rate, the reason the Greeks came out with this mythology was because when Greece was developing, that's when the Venus event occurred. The survivors in Greece lived up in the mountains, sheep herders. That's basically what they were, the people that survived that event. And when they came out and started to develop, they talked about the Venus event in the mythology of the planets, the gods in the heavens, etc. And all of the mythology that you read, if you understand what it's really saying, and this is what Velikovsky was so prominent in doing, was taking the old text, whether they were from China or in India or Tibet or any place else in the world. Unfortunately, he didn't have access to the Colburn. That was long after his time. But he studied ancient texts, and he recognized that all of these stories were the same. That Venus was captured by Jupiter, and that's the scientific explanation. Velikovsky said that Venus came out of Jupiter. Well, that was the closest explanation that he could get to logically in 1950 when he released his book, Worlds in Collision. And so the biggest mistake Velikovsky made was trying to use scientific theories at the time, which were totally incorrect, and that wasn't his fault. But he should have been a little bit more savvy, which he wasn't, unfortunately, in that regard. And so he wasn't a scientist. He should have just said, hey, I'm not a scientist. I don't know what caused this. You're the scientist, Carl Sagan or whoever. You guys go out and figure out what happened. But this is what the ancients are saying, and this is legitimate data, looking at what the ancients talked about. So the Venus was captured as a large comet nucleus by the planet Jupiter. I'm going to say Jupiter because that's what I suspect was the case. It explodes into brightness as it discharges the solar capacitor, leaving Jupiter. Now it's in an elliptical orbit in the plane of the planets. It's losing its orbit slowly. It's spiraling inward because of the tail drag. That's part of my plasma discharge comet model. As it gets in closer to Mars, it starts interacting with Mars. And it didn't just interact one time. I suspect it interacted with Mars probably maybe 15 to 20 times, very possibly. It started to, it would come in and then Mars would be in a perfect electrical alignment with this massive comet. And so the Mars would have been caught in the electrical discharge. So now you can see why I'm bringing this up. Venus is outside the orbit of Mars. Every time it comes around, it aligns electrically with Mars, and Mars gets wrapped up in that huge electron beam coming out from the sunward side. Very possibly that's where the xenon and krypton came from that are on the Martian surface. So you can see the data that has been produced by satellite data. It's been these are basically gamma ray readings that they're using to detect what materials are on the surface of Mars, indicating xenon and krypton, very likely came from the electrical discharges as Mars interacted with that electron beam, Venus coming around time and time again. And I suspect that if you look closely, you're going to find multiple places on the surface of Mars that would exhibit those signatures and possibly other heavy elements also. When Venus got close enough to make an electrical connection and also have its surface gravity close enough to where the surface gravity of Venus, which remember was larger than Mars, it had a higher surface gravity than Mars, that's when the atmosphere started to be seriously eroded off the planet Mars. So it may have happened on a number of passages. Mars may have been flooded with an extreme flooding event prior to having its atmosphere ripped off. Probably hurricanes, tornadoes, tremendous amount of wind damage before the oceans and atmosphere were finally pulled off. And then once they had a gravitational encounter, it's possible that Venus, we don't know how many times these planets interacted. And I say planets because Venus was in the formation process of becoming the planet we see today, slowly winding inwards with the tail drag causing the two effects. I've talked about this before in my show. It's in my books when I talk about the plasma discharge comet model. It's the eccentricity dampening, meaning that it's orbital eccentricity, in other words, the elliptical shape of its orbit becoming more circularized, and then energy damping, and that is the fact that its orbit is becoming smaller and smaller, getting closer to the sun. Eventually it comes in and interacts with Earth on two major occasions, probably quite a few times in addition to that, and that's why the ancients were extremely concerned about Venus. The ancients, the Venus calendar was the primary calendar of the Mayans, who our modern Mayans lived many thousands of years after the what we'll call the Mayans or the Olmecs, who lived literally back in that time frame, which Velikovsky puts at around 1500 BC, the same time as the Exodus, Moses, all of the events, the Tower of Fire. The basically tornado of fire sticking up into the sky was the electrical discharge that they saw when Venus the comet was passing by. The moving of the Red Sea, all of these events being explained by the fact that the comet Venus was coming by. And remember that the Noah's flood was thousands of years earlier. That was another comet intervention with Earth where we went through the comet tail, a large comet tail, for a period of about 40 days and 40 nights. Now, I'll come in with another angle on this. Obviously, another issue they're trying to cut me off at the pass is a number of weeks ago, I gave, in my paid cast, I gave a lecture on the world before the Great Flood. And the title of that was Baal Worship and Secret Societies. So, obviously, what they're trying to do is take what I'm giving out as real information and take a complete... Look at what they do. They throw in aliens. They throw in, ancient civilizations with nuclear bombs. I mean, look at the disinformation story that's come out. And then they ask the question, why would the military allow this to be printed? Where they, like I say, they throw in everything in the kitchen sink. Planet X, Nibiru. Well, they're trying desperately, like I say, this is an agency that's desperate to make sure that you, the public, doesn't have a clue about what really happened. Look at the big things that I talk about. Baal, which is Baal worship, which is still going on today. They just released a new temple of Baal, human sacrifice temple in New York City. Look at the imagery around Wall Street. It's all related to Baal worship. So at any rate, it's important to understand the disinformation that's coming out and then understand what's really going on in the world so that you understand the true history of the world and where those bankers came from, those guys that try and rule the world and create wars and destruction and everything else, run the presidential debate so there's no debate, take your democracy away from you. Yeah, group of swell people. At any rate, I hope this all makes sense and you see all the different aspects of this. Just a quick, couple quick comments at the end. Remember to go to my paid cast. This is September, and by the way, the way this works is you have to start listening in August of this year. So if you buy 1 month, and this is a subscription, so when you sign up, you pay for August and then September. If you wait a few days and you signed up in October, you're going to be paying $4.95 for August, $4.95 for September, and then $3.95 for October. But you really have to go back and listen to these in succession. And so that's the way it's going to be. And then if you wait till November, it's going to be you're going to have to buy back till the beginning of August. It's not like you can just come in like picking up the New York Times newspaper and start reading today's and understand what's going on, because these are in sequences. It has Tesla's mind, radiation and you, the life on planet Earth before the Great Flood. And remember that my red letter sale is still on. I'm just leaving it up there. People are having great success in ordering great water filter products at reduced prices. And the Imperials have been very, very heavy ordering on Imperial water filters. By Friday, we'll probably be caught up with orders on Imperials. And we've actually gone into a larger production on the Imperial filters. Those are the double wide filters. And so anyway, all that on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And don't forget my tanks. I also have the big tanks there from 125 gallons to 20,000 gallon tanks. All that described on my webpage. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.